This episode of the Muley Freak Podcast is brought to you by none other than the one and only Enlightened Equipment. Now, we're kind of getting done with warm weather hunting, at least where we are. We're starting to transition into more cooler weather, maybe even some snow, some sleet and rain, hail, transitioning into those later seasons. Every one of our guys is using Enlightened Equipment here at Muley Freak, and could not be happier. Now, some guys have only got the quilt. Some guys are using the quilt and the booties. Some guys are using the quilt and the hood. Some guys have a jacket from Enlightened Equipment. Regardless, we're using the equipment that that Enlightened Equipment has put out. It's amazing stuff. It's lightweight. I mean, we're talking sometimes even guys are shaving pounds off of their sleep system just by switching over to an Enlightened Equipment quilt. Now, their website is legit. You can get on and customize everything from the color that you like to the fabric. The outside color and the inside color are customizable. You can choose what fabric is on the outside and the inside. And you can even choose a pattern on the outside of the bag if you so choose. Now, you can choose the inside as well. You can do a synthetic fill bag if you'd like, if you want something for a little bit wetter conditions, or you can do a down fill and you can choose 850 or 950, whatever your preference may be. Now, check those guys out. Their website, like I said, it's amazing. Enlightened Equipment. You won't be disappointed. Also, the makers of the unofficially titled Superman, the Energy and Focus and Hydrate and Recover Super Mixed Drink creators, Wilderness Athlete. Now, that may not be an official item that they have on their website, but I'll tell you what, you mix Energy and Focus with Hydrate and Recover, and it's a it's a game changer. Be prepared, because it'll light you up. Now, we have a running coupon code with Wilderness Athlete, MF10. When you go to check out, fill up your cart, get all your stuff that you need to finish out the rest of the season, load up your cart, go to checkout, MF10, it knocks 10% right off the cart price, and you are good to go from now to the end of the season. It'll keep you in the game. And the guys here at Muley Freak have decided to give out a special coupon code to the listeners of the podcast. So now, when you get on to muleyfreak.com and load up on merchandise, even the gear that we've got on the store, podcast15 is the coupon code. When you go to check out, enter that as the coupon code. It'll save you 15% off your total cart price. We've got tons of shirts coming in. I can tell you right now, a couple of guys in-house are designing some shirts that are coming down the pipeline. They are legit. Hats as well. We've got gear coming down. I don't know what I can and can't talk about quite yet, so we'll plug those at a future date. But Podcast 15 is your designated coupon code for being a podcast listener. It's our way of thanking you for listening in. Thanks, guys. Here's this week's episode. You're dialed in to another episode of the Muley Freak Podcast.
If you burn up your weekend opening weekend instead of the last weekend, then you might be shorting yourself on a few bucks that wouldn't have been there if the snow wouldn't have kind of got starting their migration.
Unscripted, real conversations about everything to do with Western big game hunting.
I didn't stay home because it's opening day and there's going to be a lot of people and the hunting's going to suck. I took my dad's advice, got up there on a point, and I could sit there and glass four-wheelers and pickups stopping here and there and all around me. And I literally like had a pick of 15 bucks.
Tips and tactics, opinions, where we've been, where we're going. Here's this week's episode. Tyler Crockett, I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me, man. If you wouldn't mind just giving a little brief introduction of yourself and what your adventures have kind of brought you to up to this day.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, first of all.
And, definitely.
My name is Tyler Crockett, as stated. I am one of the members of the Pure Elevation Productions with Steve Speck, Lenny Nelson, and Jason Wright. And also, I'm basically the manager that puts on manager and owner, second owner of the Northwest Mountain Challenge, 3D bow shoots up here in the Northwest.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Steve and TJ and I have been partners for a while, and Steve this year finally is like, I got too much going on. You guys just want to do it. So TJ and I are just rolling with it and blowing that thing up every year.
Awesome. I know Eric and Aaron have gone to a couple of those shoots. Yep. And they say they're a hell of a time. It's a good time to just, it's kind of like right in the time of year where everybody is like just getting ready to jump into full swing as far as their shooting prep and getting them in shape and stuff like that. They say it's a pretty good event. I've never been, but they talk highly of it.
Yeah, man, it's a blast. We blew it up this year. We had 1,500 people at Hoodoo, 900 people at Tamarack, and 800 people at Stevens Pass this year.
Wow, that's an awesome turnout.
It was crazy. Hoodoo, we did not expect it, and it's just like, oh my gosh, there's like nowhere for anybody to park. They're parked 2 miles down the road. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool to just see a bunch of like-minded, you know. So we get so many bow hunters there. We get a few shirt shooters or, you know, tournament shooter guys there.
Yeah.
But just get a bunch of like-minded kind of backcountry hunter guys at those things, and it's pretty cool.
That is awesome. It's cool to be a part of something like that.
Yeah, it's rewarding on several levels for sure.
I can imagine. So, and then for Pure Elevation on that side, talk about that for a little bit.
So it's Pure Elevation Productions is a thing that was started. I don't know. We started it 7-8 years ago, and maybe 2011, and done a couple DVDs. We were part of a show on one of the networks for a while, and things changed there. We changed our relationships a little bit, and now we just have a YouTube channel, Pure Elevation Productions, and we just are constantly getting content and editing footage and just trying to keep some fresh content up on the YouTube channel.
It seems like that's a pretty good way to go as far as just the freedom that comes with it. I mean, you guys, you're your own bosses at that point, and you can manage the content. You guys do a great job. I mean, I love the stuff that you guys put out, the shooting and the angles and the production and the editing and all that. It's awesome. You guys do a good job. And to put that out on a platform like YouTube where everybody has access to it, you know, I can only imagine that it only helps you guys.
Yeah, no, man, it's super fun. Because we aren't fancy. None of us, we're all just hunters that decided to pick up a camera and capture what we're doing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We always laugh at ourselves a little bit like, yeah, we're like the Blair Witch Project meets Matt Singer. and we were real and raw and unfancy before it was cool.
Nice. that's a pretty good description right there, man. That's dead on. That is.
But yeah, man, we have a blast every year. We look forward to it, and I mean, it is a grind, you know, trying to remember to get the content and capture it when all of us, all four of us, are like in our minds, we're like, let's just go shoot stuff. We got to do this camera thing. Dang it. Okay, hold on. It is definitely challenging for any of your listeners that video their hunts and stuff. It just adds a whole nother element to it that if you don't keep in mind that it's fun and it's kind of just as cool behind the lens as it is the weapon, you know, if you lose sight of that, it can kind of get daunting almost.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, I've come to find that myself. It's if you don't find it rewarding to record and kind of preserve all of those memories via video and photos, if you find that a burden, it just makes it almost impossible. But if you can find it as a reward, and you know, you get home and actually can enjoy the footage and look back on it, and then like you guys publish it for other people to enjoy. But yeah, it does take a sense of dedication to throw all the extra camera gear in your back, and I don't know. I mean, sometimes you're talking 5, 10, 15 pounds of extra camera stuff, and where, you know, the name of the game is cutting weight, you guys are throwing more on, and it's more for just the benefit of the content that you guys are out there to get. So you've got to be dedicated, and you have to enjoy it, like I said.
Oh, totally. It's funny. Like when we do some projects with some collaborations, like with Born and Raised last year, and then we're going with them again this year, 2.0. And all of us, like, we kind of kind of look at ourselves as we try to be kind of minimalist as far as weight and packs and gear and items. And it's funny, we'll go and we'll have like with Cody and those guys, and they'll have like, you know, 20 pounds of camera gear.
Yeah.
Like, hey, can we borrow some of your batteries?
And that's imagine doing, you know, these guys that go and do hunts up in the Northwest Territories and stuff, where they're taking 2 weeks worth of camera gear, 2 weeks worth of batteries and stuff. I'm like, ah.
Oh yeah. Man, yeah. It's,
it gets overwhelming.
Well, that is crazy.
I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me, man. And between the two of us, we've kind of hashed out the basis of this topic that we want to cover. And I mean, we had a brief phone call yesterday, and I think we got a pretty good idea of how to handle this. So let's talk about crowds. Let's talk about managing crowds while you're in the backcountry and not necessarily looking at it. I mean, in some ways, it is a bad thing, but not looking at it as such a bad thing and being able to perhaps utilize the crowds or not let the crowds keep you from enjoying the backcountry or enjoying the opening weekend or your hunt. Let's dive into that. What are your thoughts? Let's start right off. Opening weekend, you show up to your spot and there's more guys that are there on opening weekend than have been there scouting. What do you do? What happens?
So are we starting off? Are we talking archery or rifle?
That's a good point.
Those might be two different things for me.
That, you know what? Let's do both, but let's start with archery.
Okay. You know, archery. When I show up, if I show up at a trailhead that I have scouted, and of course, when you're scouting, you don't see as many people at the trailhead,
right?
Because everybody scouts at different time.
Yep.
You know, the season's always open. And honestly, when I show up, especially if I found somewhere that I really want to go, because maybe I found a bull or a buck that I'm like, that thing is awesome, I have to fight back. I'm pretty optimistic. Of all of us, our guys, our crew, I'm like the optimist, like maybe over the top ridiculous. Like they make fun of me about being optimistic. But I no doubt will pull into a trailhead and see, you know, four or five rigs there, and just in the back of my mind, like, oh my, well, this spot's shot. Might as well go somewhere else. But I do a pretty good job of fighting through that and thinking that's okay, because most of the time, our style of hunting, it pushes past most of those people.
Yeah.
So the opening archery, I never get too flustered when there's lots of cars there, because for the most part, we kind of get back further than most of the people at the trailhead. That's,
yeah,
that's like on our backcountry hunts. But I get two tags every year, because I live in Donnelly, Idaho, and so it's crazy for me not to have a tag in my backyard, so I can take my kids hunting and after school and skip school and stuff like that. But it's a little different though, because here I don't go as far back when I take my kids,
mm-hmm.
and so then I am having to be concerned about the people and the amount of hunters that are around me, because there's a lot of people that hunt just a mile or two off the road,
yeah,
up here where I live, a lot. And early, you know, when I first started picking up a bow, it kind of always freaked me out, because I'm like, oh, I got to get back. You know, I was used to rifle hunting, like getting way back. Well, all of a sudden I've got kids, I'm staying close to home and with this tag, and I'm like, okay. I realized that, oh my gosh, so many people run around and, you know, either road bugle or four-wheeler bugle, or they just travel until they hear a bugle. And there's people all over the place. I mean, the elk woods are live with fake elk.
Yeah.
All
yes.
the time. And it, I don't know, a handful of, probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I kind of got to where I didn't mind it so much, because one, there's so many people wandering around that it was hard for elk to find a spot just to stop,
mm-hmm.
and hang up. They're constantly getting bumped and moved. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I've killed two bulls from other people calling that I just was like, well, there's someone calling above me. There's some calling below me. I know there's elk right here. I'm just going to get up here and I'm just going to sit. And I've had people calling from literally, you know, 1,000 yards or 1,000 feet, whatever, up on the ridge, and I'm down in the trees, and I've had them walk across me and shoot them. And I mean, it's kind of like, I feel kind of like a jerk, but I'm like, hey, I'm hunting the same country. You're up there calling. I'm sorry they crossed me before you.
Yep. Well, it could have easily just happened the other way too. They could have crossed them up on top and not you. I mean, it's
exactly.
Yeah. I agree.
So people, I don't mind it, man, because when people are running around bugling here and there, and you hear the four-wheelers turn off and hear a bugle, man, elk down in the trees, they don't care that there's a four-wheeler, because they hear four-wheelers all the time. Mm-hmm. They hear motorcycles all the time. And all of a sudden they hear a bugle come in, well, they'll talk. And it's such a fun way, honestly, to locate them without you having to give up where you're at.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think a lot, you mentioned something earlier, that a lot of that has to do with knowing where the animals are going to be to begin with. Because if you didn't know that there were going to be elk in that certain spot, a guy calling below you and a guy calling above you doesn't really do much for you unless you know there's going to be elk in this certain area. So I think that's a good point, because dealing with crowds, yeah, I get that, but knowing where there's going to be some sort of, you know, little sanctuaries, or where they like to have, maybe where they like to bed during the day, or maybe even watering spots, knowing where those are doesn't necessarily mean that all of these other crowds or all these other hunters out there in the woods know where those locations are too. So it's an added advantage in that case.
Oh, totally. And knowing the country, you know, in a heavy hunted area, you know, specifically for archery elk, heavily hunted area, knowing the country is huge, because I'm a local. So I get to spend a lot of time, and I literally can point, sitting here at my office, I can point at every spot on the mountains, basically 360 degrees around me, and know that's a bedding area, that's a bedding area. And I know where all the bedding areas are.
Yeah.
And I know where all the roads are. So it really can play to my advantage, just knowing where I'm at so well that it doesn't really bother me that there's a ton of people here.
Yeah, exactly. And knowing, I think what some people, I've started to do this within the last couple of years, but I've started to hunt closer to home in some aspects, and there's a lot of little nooks and crannies that are not too far from trailheads and not too far from roads, but that get completely overlooked, and that just so happens to be a bedding area. And yep. Or you go in there and you find some rubs, or you go in there and find maybe a wallow or two, and it's these little pockets of no pressure that are just as good as 12 miles in the backcountry, because they're sanctuaries for these animals. But knowing where those are, and I think a lot of that, just it helps to have that close to home, because not everybody can haul off, you know, 4 or 5 weekends out of the summer and go backpack in to a wilderness area, or, you know, sometimes that's half a day's drive, sometimes a day's drive for some people. And I think a good message is try hunting closer to home and try finding these little nooks and crannies that you and other hunters might be overlooking, because we might shy away from them thinking, oh, there's going to be a ton of people there, but they still have their little hidey holes. They're there.
Oh, man. Oh, I completely agree. I was listening to a podcast the other day that Robbie Denning was doing, and he defined backcountry as, you know, backcountry could be a mile off of a road. It doesn't have to be 9 miles deep and in the Frank Church, or it can be like anywhere that is just somewhere that everybody else isn't going. And it literally like one little drainage in the middle of where everybody's hunting that nobody really goes into.
Yep.
Just because they're like, well, I'm going to stay over here because there's roads and there's trails. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's, I think in everybody's backyard, there are those little pockets where everything kind of runs to, and nobody wants to, they might not want to climb up the 1,000-foot face to drop into this back basin, when I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, as a crow flies, a mile from town.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, there's no reason to shy away from it. It's going to be extra work, no doubt about it. But getting there, I think you're gonna see a whole new world. I've been places that are a mile from the trailhead or a mile from a major highway even, and I get in there and I'm not seeing old rusted tin cans. I'm not seeing plastic wrappers. Yeah. I'm not seeing fire pits. But I'm seeing those things when I go like 8 to 10 miles into a wilderness area, and I'm like, well, this is, this is so counterintuitive. But I agree with that. Now, hunting those areas close to home and knowing where those hidey holes are, let's talk about getting in and being prepared for opening week and not. I think we've all had experiences with those guys that come up from the bottom, or that are, we've all had our eyes on a buck, or we've all had our eyes on some elk, and some guys come up and not kind of just oblivious that there's any animals there. Let's talk about getting in before everybody and then being able to ride that pressure wave.
Well, that's so true. When I was a rifle hunter, I was kind of, my dad actually told me this, like, don't worry about all the people driving around out here and walking these flats. He said, don't worry about it. They're going to show up. It's opening, especially rifle season in Idaho, opening day is just like World War III.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially in certain units here in Idaho, it is just chaos.
Yep.
And my dad, when I was 15 years old, he was like, hey, you know what you need to do? He said, you need to get up there 3 hours before anybody else, find an awesome spot where you can see and just sit down. And so I was 15 or 16. And so I did that. I got up, like started hiking at 3 a.m, hiked up, and I got there and I sat for bored out of my mind, sat there for like 2.5 hours for it to get light. And it's still the biggest buck that I've shot to date doing that. Wow. I didn't stay home because it's opening day and there's gonna be a lot of people and the hunting's gonna suck. I took my dad's advice, got up there on a point, and I could sit there and glass four-wheelers and pickups stopping here and there and all around me. And I literally like had a pick of 15 bucks run through this saddle from people chasing from one side to the other, because I was already in position. I wasn't coming up, after I had my pancakes in the morning and my, whatever. I was already there.
Yeah.
And I think that is such a, like, I take my girls are old enough to hunt, and that's a huge thing we do, is we get up there super early and we just sit and wait for the banging start. Because opening day rifle season, everything is running around like crazy.
Oh yeah.
And if you're in a spot where it's a good trail or a saddle or something, I mean, the likely in a heavy hunted areas, generally, it's a really good spot to be, because there will definitely be deer running across your lap.
I like that. Now, you've mentioned two key things that you kind of looked for or preferred in that sit and wait spot that you described. One is a saddle. Explain why you like to sit on those. Why was that a good idea?
So saddles, just in general, it's such an easy, deer and elk, while they can climb up and down mountains, they like to take the easier route if they can. Mm-hmm. And saddles are always a little easier than going up the face up to the peak or going down where everybody else is. So they'll think, okay, I'm on this side of the drainage, I need to get to that side of the drainage because there's a lot of booming, there's a lot of banging over here, I can see rigs, the deer trying to maybe go to their safe spot that's maybe a high basin. Mm-hmm. And getting out of there. Elk, same with elk too. And saddles are just, I mean, as a, like a general rule of thumb, such a great place to sit opening day.
Now let's talk about the visibility. Because we've all seen plenty of saddles that we've come across, but they're thick timber saddles maybe, or they've just got real thick vegetation, or you can't get a high spot. Why was visibility important when you chose that particular saddle?
Because if it's full of timber, full of brush, you might not be able to see animals moving through there. So there's probably a lot of saddles I know there are, that I'd love to sit in, but for archery, maybe it wouldn't be bad to sit there all day and just hope one passes through. But for rifle hunting, sitting in a saddle that you can't see not only around you and see what's going on below you, but like having a really good vantage point that you can see an open saddle. I know for sure there's one specific saddle that I would love to sit in, because I know, I mean, it's beaten, it's 6 inches thick of dust from animals crossing through this saddle, but it is so thick that you wouldn't, I mean, it'd be like a hip shot.
Yeah.
With a rifle.
That's a good point. Being able to see, especially where the animals are coming, they're coming and going in such an irregular fashion. I mean, they've got a hitch in their step. They're moving a little quicker than normal. They're not stopping and grazing and stopping and browsing. They got a place to be and they're getting the hell out of there.
Oh yeah, and they're running through there with their mouth open.
Exactly.
Know?
So being able to see, you know, maybe a few hundred yards one direction off the saddle and maybe a few hundred directions off the other side. I mean, that's, especially like you said, hunting with a rifle, that's a game changer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, yeah, it's easy to get your mind spun out on all the people, but if you slow down and just kind of like, okay, how can I use these people to my advantage? And then just play it from there. Make your playbook from that.
Sorry, you kind of broke up there a little bit, and I think I'm not going to say I think. I know you said something important.
Oh,
so I want you to repeat that.
Instead of getting spun out by opening day and all the people and thinking I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah.
You know, get to a spot where you can take advantage of the people.
Yep. Knowing where they're going to be coming to and coming from.
Yep.
I think that's a key point.
And that applies in archery and rifle, honestly.
Yeah. I have my own saddle sitting story that happened to me on an opening day of an archery hunt. In fact, it was the biggest bull elk that I've ever seen on public land. And it came huffing up a saddle. I was sitting in a kind of a crotch of a tree on a saddle early in the morning. Just kind of, I wasn't real familiar with the area, so I just kind of picked a spot that I saw was well trafficked, and I'm like, you know, I'm gonna sit here and see what happens. And this elk came huffing up the saddle. He wasn't in a hurry, but he also wasn't taking his time. I mean, he had a destination in mind. He was heading there. Mouth open, like you said, kind of get, you know, going to a destination. And he came up this saddle, parked maybe 20, 30 feet from the end of this tree that I was sitting at, and where he stopped for an instant, and where he stopped, there was about an 8 foot little baby pine tree right in his line of sight. So he never saw me the whole time, and picked up and he kind of just continued on his way. I did not have an elk tag in my pocket. So from that day forth, I've made it a point to get my elk tag before I go. But that was just another example of sitting on a saddle. Now, it was not a saddle that I would have sat with a rifle. There's no way. It was nice and thick, big, heavy cover, a lot of blowdown on one side of the saddle, but it was well trafficked, and with a bow I could have made it happen had I had a tag in my pocket. But just another example of, and he, I think that bull ended up getting killed later on that day, and I went and talked to the guys that ended up shooting him, and they explained to me that they had come from the bottom of that one saddle, and I, you know, it kind of triggered a thought. Maybe they pushed him up that saddle to begin with, and, you know, it was just one of those situations where dealing with pressure, had I had a tag in my pocket, dealing with the crowds, I could have had that elk because of something those guys were doing down below. You know, it could have worked out.
Oh, totally, man. And, you know, another reason not be scared off by crowds and opening day, like, oh, I'm just going to stay home. In my mind, a bad day in the woods is a good day.
Amen.
You know,
yep. Amen to that.
So, like, would I rather be on my couch and not have the chance? If you're not there, wherever it is, if you're not sitting in a saddle, if you're not just out, your chances are zero. I'd rather take 1% chance than 0% chance any day.
Yep. There's been days like that. At least here where I live in Utah, I'm real close to being able to hunt the extended unit along the Wasatch Front. So It's nothing for me to get off work and head up into the mountains for a few hours, you know. But it's those days that I'm like, ah, man, it's too cold. I don't want to get up. I don't want to hike up, because this spot that I like to go to, I hike up just as I get to where I'm going just as it's kind of starting to get dark. So it's like, I really want to buy, I really got to have the motivation to get up there. But the times that I have not wanted to go, but I've gone anyway, have been the times that I've seen deer and been able to locate some and at least make a game plan for getting back up there when there's more daylight. So it's, it does, the perseverance pays off for sure, even when you don't want to go.
I can agree with that. Yeah, absolutely, man, absolutely.
Now, let's talk about, so we started with the archery deal for opening day and especially kind of leaning more toward elk. Let's talk about dealing with some of the crowds. Well, let's see. We covered that too with rifle. I like the breakdown of sitting on some of the topography that we talked about. Now, let's talk about maybe later in the year or do you miss opening weekend? Is there ever any time where you're like, you know what, it's so busy or so bad that I'm not going to go opening weekend? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, if you have limited time where like, okay, I have one weekend during this 2-3 or a month long deer hunt, it's a talk, because I think opening weekend is awesome just because so many deer are moving. I mean, there's so many deer getting busted out of spots, elk too getting busted out of spots from people hiking. Yep. But I am sometimes torn between that and like deer hunting specifically. The later you can go, the closer you can get to, you know, the snow comes in and they start maybe migrating and all of a sudden there's new bucks in the area. If you burn up your weekend opening weekend instead of the last weekend, then you might be shorting yourself on a few bucks that wouldn't have been there if the snow wouldn't have kind of got them starting their migration. So it is kind of a toss up when it comes to, I'm not afraid of opening day because of people. I'm more afraid of opening day because I know that later there'll be more bucks in that area.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just because of weather changes and them starting to migrate. That makes sense. Now, one of the things that I've experienced is if I do miss opening weekend, I kind of experienced this last week. I hunted opening weekend and then I missed the next weekend and then I went back out the weekend after. And that just so happened to be the opener of the grouse hunt. And so now you're talking about dealing with crowds, but you're dealing with crowds that aren't necessarily after the same critter that you're after. So it was another pawn in the chess game that I'm like, all right, now where are these grouse hunters going to be going so that I can play, you know, the disruptions that they're going to be making? Because on an archery hunt, I mean, when there hasn't been a bang up in the mountains, you know, pretty much all year, when these grouse hunters show up during an archery hunt and they start shooting shotguns off, it's definitely, you know, it gets the animals' attention. Especially I've seen within the couple of days that I was there, I was able to see kind of a change in behavior, at least just because of a few shotgun shots that were going off. And you know, that's got to affect them. So not like a rifle hunt would, but it does affect their behavior. And so I think knowing what hunts, that's a good point that I wanted to bring up. Knowing what hunts are going to be going on in your area and being able to manage the time and manage the traffic around those, even if they're not exactly after your same animal, I think that goes back to your homework side of things.
Oh, totally. I live in a unit where they open up a cow season, the cow season, like 2 weeks before the archery elk opener. And they can shoot those with short range weapon. So they're out there with shotguns. And they, 2 weeks before,
okay,
you're even up there archery hunting, which that's all kind of in the lower valley part.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely, knowing that is there, you pretty much can count on all the bulls being pushed up off the bottoms.
Gotcha.
And then a little bit higher because of not only hunting different critters, but different weapons.
Gotcha. And being 2 weeks earlier than everything else.
Yep, exactly. It kind of pushes them where you think they might be because you've seen them there, doesn't mean there really anymore because people have been banging away with muzzleloaders and shotguns for 2 weeks.
So now imagine if you had, you know, gotten that tag or were heading to that area and did not know that it had already been hunted for 2 weeks prior to you getting there. That's kind of a...
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you definitely got to know what's there and what's been hunted and what they've been hunted with.
Exactly. I think that's important. It's an important step. That just goes back again to doing your homework, knowing what's going on. Because I know here in Utah, there's a lot. Well, I think almost every limited entry elk unit also has a spike hunt going on during that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's differing opinions on it. And it's controversial at times, but they do. The spike hunt does close off, I think, 1 week or 2 weeks before the end of the archery hunt. So there's that 2 week span where no spike hunters are out in the woods. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. There might be a lot of pressure for those first 2 weeks because you've got guys chasing big bulls and spikes for 2 weeks straight. But then there's the end of the season that's got, you know, that week or two, it's only guys chasing big bulls. So there's kind of a pressure curve that I've noticed in some of these areas where it drops off dramatically and you're going from dealing with a bunch of guys chasing a bunch of critters to now being able to focus in on these critters, on these bigger bulls that you've been chasing all year. And it's just changing the game. You just got to know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. What do you got planned for this fall, Tyler? You got anything big coming up?
Man, it's going to be crazy busy. So Lenny and I went deer hunting in the high country here in Idaho for 5 days and then came home, had to do some home stuff, get some work stuff caught up. And I got a couple daughters that high school rodeo, so I got to take them to high school rodeos this weekend. But on the 9th, we got three vets. We're taking three vets hunting.
Nice.
Which, yeah, it'd be super fun. Lenny, Jason, and I are splitting the duties on going hunting with these guys, and we're elk nut Paul Medell and his son Paul Medell Jr. are going to come, and they're just coming to call to try to get elk in front of these vets.
Wow.
And we'll have the cameras rolling. It'll be a fun project with these vets coming over and just trying to give back to them. It'll be awesome.
You know, that's such an exciting thing to get these veterans out and getting them enjoying things that they may not be able to enjoy on a regular basis. I know we've done a couple of hunts. The Muley Freak guys have, Eric and Aaron. They did a couple hunts. In fact, they did it was a hunt a couple years ago, and it was just cool to see talk about a group of guys that are, I think they're the most appreciative guys on the planet when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, they're such a humble group as a general, and when something like that is given to them, I mean, they're just appreciative, you know, they don't take it for granted at all.
Oh, absolutely. And what's so cool about these guys is they've never elk hunted. They're Eastern guys.
Oh, you know, wow.
They've shot a lot of, did I lose you? Oh, there you are. They're whitetail guys, so they've never elk hunted. And that's probably one of my favorite things to do is take people out that have never elk hunted, because once you have a bull 10 yards, 15 yards in front of you screaming his head off, there's nothing that compares to that.
I can agree with that. That is, and to come from hunting whitetail to going and doing that's the big leagues, man. That's exciting for them to go and do it with a bunch of guys like you that have that passion and have the expertise to be able to go in there and get them on some action. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, we're super pumped. So that's the 9th through the 16th, and then got to go to another high school rodeo with the girls, and then I come home, and then Land of the Free 2.0 with Born and Raised starts the 20th.
Nice.
And we hunt the 20th through the 30th with them, and that's always a blast hunting with those guys.
And now you said you did that a couple times last year with them during the first Land of the Free, right?
Yeah, we went to Colorado last year and had a blast with them, for sure. It was a total blast. So this year, we're bringing them to our stomping grounds.
I like it. Yeah, I like it. And all of this, I'm assuming you're going to be filming most of it, if not all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll be filming the whole thing. Several cameras running on several situations. Maybe some wanted film stuff and some probably unwanted film stuff. We're going to get it all.
Well, that's what I like about watching your guys' stuff is, like you said, you guys were raw and real before it was cool.
I think on our it might be our YouTube channel or something, but it says we film the good and the bad, and that is very
you get what you get. There it is.
Wait, how about you, man? Are you getting ready to get out and get completely worthless for the rest of the month?
Pretty much. I'm kind of like you. I'm getting a couple honeydews out of the way, and we're going on a little family camping trip this weekend, and so spend some time with the family, and then after that, I'm going to be meeting some guys up in our elk spot that are going in. They're going in on horseback a few days before I am, so I'm going to hike in and meet up with them, and then we'll spend the rest of the archery season up there till it closes. So that'll be until the 15th, really, well, the 14th. And then, hopefully, I'm a little bummed, man. I've been watching the weather forecast, and it's a little warmer than I want it to be. So I wish it would, I wish there'd be a cold snap or something coming on, but take what you can get. And then, you know, that's just the way it is. The archery season cuts off right as the getting's getting good.
I know, that's so true. If it stays hot like this, the rifle guys might be calling a lot of bulls into their lap and shooting them from 50 yards with their 300s.
Yep, exactly. Now, and Utah's doing this multi-season tag that I think they sold out all the tags, but they're doing a multi-season where you can buy and hunt elk, archery, muzzleloader, and rifle. So you can kind of ride the wave. So I'll be interested to see, you know, what the success rates are this year with guys that have bought those tags, because it seems like a good way to go. You know, if the objective is thinning some elk out, I think it might work.
Oh, I think that'll work. I remember that's how Idaho used to be. You just get an archery tag and you can hunt with rifle. Kind of like the deer is still, you know, you get an archery tag, you can hunt with rifle during the rifle season, but now they've got the A and the B tag. It's just kind of changed. And plus, you have to pick zone as opposed to used to be you could just get an elk tag and hunt anywhere in the state that was a general unit.
Oh, so now they've got it. You got to pick your spot then.
Yeah, you got to pick your zone. They'll take like three units, put them into one zone, and then you have to stay in that zone.
Oh, okay.
Which is annoying because we deer hunt usually out of a zone, any of the two zones we elk hunt in, and undoubtedly, like, I'll throw some footage up here pretty soon on Instagram. Lenny and I are deer hunting and in our, like, deer country, and shoot, we called in three bulls to the furthest one was 16 yards all at one time. There surrounded us, and one of them was like a 310, 315 bull, and we're just like, wow, that'd sure be fun to shoot that bull right now. But I guess we'll just look at his majesty only.
Oh, man. Well, you got to practice your calling, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, and I did it with our new signature tube that's coming out.
Oh, nice. So let's talk about that. I didn't know you guys had something like that in the works.
Yeah, it was a toilet paper roll.
I like it. $59.99 then, is that what the price is going to be on it?
Pre-orders will start at the end of September for our toilet paper roll bugle tube.
Nice. I like it. You can kind of like smash the ends a little bit to get different tones and stuff out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. You have it wide open for, you know, a big old bull, and shrink it down a little bit for a little raghorn. It
nice.
Works perfect.
I like it. There's not a lot of adjustable tubes out there, man. You guys are killing the game.
I think there's a market for that kind of tube. I'm not sure.
I know. You better not share that with Corey Jacobson, man. He'll hawk that.
I know. I feel bad putting Phelps out of business with my toilet paper tube.
He puts an Elk 101 logo on that, and they're done for. They're gone. Oh, that's good stuff. Well, Tyler, man, I appreciate you sitting down and talking to me about, you know, I think we covered a subject that a lot of guys deal with but have never really sat down and kind of have broken down, and I think it'll be useful to a lot of guys coming up. I know there might not be many more archery opening days, but I know we've got muzzleloader coming up and rifle, and I think your know-how definitely will help a few guys out this coming year, and help them play the crowds a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And like I said earlier, a good day in the woods is never a bad day anyways.
Amen to that. Yeah, don't let the crowds keep you home.
Yep.
Can't kill a buck on the couch. I don't know. Some guys might be able to kill a buck on the couch. Some of these killers we know.
that's so true. My dad lives in northern Idaho, and he killed a 150-inch whitetail sitting on his deck drinking coffee. He didn't hike more than 5 yards out the screen door and shot a bigger whitetail than I've ever shot.
Oh, so. Dude, I there you go. I think I'd hang it up, man. I'd just keep buying flannel shirts and call it good. That's good stuff. Well, Tyler, I appreciate it, man. So everybody on the listening can find you guys on Instagram. Pure Elevation, is it Pure Elevation Productions, the full word on Instagram?
You know what? That's a really good question.
They could find you. I guess they could find you if they just searched
that, right?
Yeah,
Pure Elevation Productions on Instagram and Pure Elevation Productions on our YouTube channel. And then Facebook, if that still exists anymore, I'm not sure.
I know, right? Well, I will. I'll link to all of that stuff in the description for this podcast, so guys can find the YouTube channel and Instagram and all that stuff, and keep track of what's going on. And you guys do a pretty good job of getting your footage up at a relatively quick pace. So you guys have a timeline as far as when people will be able to watch your hunts from this fall.
Yeah. We try to throw them up as soon as possible, unless it's a project. Like I've got a bear film, which really nobody ever cares about bear films. But I've got a bear project we're working on, and yeah, we try to get up as fast as we can. But we're pretty much don't edit anything in September and October, unfortunately.
There you go. Well, that's always good. I think during the off season is when guys really want to entertain themselves, so it works out perfect.
Exactly.
Speaking for myself anyway, right?
Yep.
Well, cool, man. Hey, I appreciate you sitting down, and let's be in touch, man. Let's cover any more topics come to mind that you want to cover in the future. Let's sit down and bang it out.
Okay, yeah, man. Thanks for having me on, Corey.
Not a problem, man. We'll talk to you later, and good luck here in the next couple weeks.
All right, yeah, same to you.
Talk to you later, man.